Thank you, Nick, for reading that. Thank you for asking me. And Nancy, thank you for putting that on the bulletin. We will get to that in due course, but I would like you to turn your Bibles first to the book of Proverbs. That may seem like a strange way to start looking at the Sermon on the Mount, but hopefully it'll make sense. Hopefully. President John F. Kennedy in 1963, while promoting his income tax cut, this is the same year he was killed, but earlier that year, in a speech to the Economic Club of New York, he made this statement. He said, "It's a paradox. You can actually increase revenues by cutting taxes." A paradox is a self-contradictory statement, seeming contradiction, contrary to expectation, opinion, or thinking. Even in the book of Proverbs, we see this. A paradox is, well, verse 7 of chapter 1. "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." It's not as obvious as a paradox, but still it is, because fearing God sounds intense or negative. You think about things that you fear, whether it's bears or lions or tigers or alligators or sharks or snakes. I hate snakes. You fear them. Well, how in the world that doesn't make sense? How would you fearing them be the beginning of knowledge? So it's paradoxical in that sense. And then, of course, it leads to something positive, knowledge. Well, some people already think they know everything, so they don't want to learn. Well, that just proves that they're a fool. In chapter 3, verse 27, it says, "Do not withhold good." This is from the ESV. "Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is yours, or when it is in your power to act." Yet chapter 22, verse 9 says, "The generous will themselves be blessed, for they share their food with the poor." This is paradoxical because giving away what you have seems to reduce your own wealth. But the act of generosity somehow brings blessings back to you. And of course, my all-time favorite is chapter 26 of Proverbs, verses 4 and 5. "Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself." This is from the English Standard Version. But then verse 5 says, "Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes." Well, that just seems to contradict itself altogether. At first, you're told not to answer the fool, because if you do, you might look foolish yourself. But either way, it's about avoiding becoming foolish, like he is. So whether you answer him or not, be careful not to become like he is. So that's what a paradox is. But the main, well, including that, I'll consider it four, but in the book of Proverbs, the main comparisons that we see uses this word "but." It's throughout the entire book, but I would just turn your attention to chapter 10, because that particular chapter is just chocked full of these comparisons that uses this word "but." Well, just start off with it. Proverbs of Solomon, "A wise son maketh a glad father, but a foolish son is heaviness of his mother. Treasures of the wicked profit of nothing, but righteousness delivered from death." It goes on and on throughout that entire chapter. Chapter 12, verse 25 does the same thing. It's a type of comparison. This is the time of year, many of you grow your own gardens, there's a variety of tomatoes and these kinds of things. Well, there's a variety of comparisons, and this is one of those varieties that typically uses the word "but." It's a contrast. Then there's the what is called the completing, where the way they use the word "and" or "so." And because I like this song, turn back to the book of Psalms, because it's based on this. We sing it in here all the time out of our praise book. Psalm 42, verse 1, "As the hart," or the deer, panteth after the water brook, so panteth my soul after thee, O God. We see that in chapter 11, well, actually chapter 6, verse 11, chapter 10, verse 25, chapter 11, verse 19 and 22. Proverbs uses this type of comparison, this variety of comparison as well. It's completing. It uses either and or so. Then there's the what is referred to as a comparative type comparison, using the word better or like. Just turn to chapter 15. We'll just go through just a few of these. We're going to get to the Sermon on the Mount, I promise. But there's a reason for doing this. Look at chapter 15, verse 16. Better is little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble therewith. Chapter 16, verse 8. Better is little with righteousness than great revenues without right. And you can go on, Proverbs 18 and 19, 20 and 5, 23 and 32, 25 and 19. These are all examples of this type of comparison, this variety of comparison. The book of Proverbs was written about 1,000 years before Jesus came to the earth. And so this is a standard, common way, approach of teaching. Blake brought out in his class that the Apostle Paul said, I didn't come with this fancy speech or eloquence of speech. I just came to you with plain, simple truth. And that's what Solomon is doing here. He's telling plain, simple truth in a plain, simple way, in a plain, simple approach. We do it all the time in our everyday language. Another thing that is used frequently is a metaphor. Most of you know what this means. It's a statement that says one thing is another by way of emphasizing a likeness or quality. We say, she's an angel, or he's a lion in battle. A simile is very, very similar, but it makes a comparison between two things by using the words as or like. She's good as an angel. He fights like a lion in battle. Jesus uses this all the time in his teaching. I am the vine, ye are the branches. That's a metaphor. The kingdom of heaven is like unto, and he goes on. That's a simile. These are all various ways of comparing and teaching, and it was a common thing, and it is a common thing even in our own language. So now, turn over to the fifth chapter of the book of Matthew, the Sermon on the Mount. And Nick read for us a portion of that. The reason I want to talk about this, in my 45 years of barbering, I've had that particular verse thrown at me quite a bit. And it seemed like every time I really never knew how to respond to it. Growing up in the period of time that I grew up in, those of you that are my age, at least 50% of the TV shows on TV and the movies were Westerns. And it was common in every Western to have the gunslinger that always, he was fast at the draw out his gun, and intimidate everybody. Well, that's what people do with Matthew 7 and 1. They just draw that out just like that gunslinger does his gun and throw it right in your face. Judge not that you be not judged. It's usually because they're losing the argument or I point something out that I believe that they don't believe and they think I'm being judgmental. And they tell me not to judge, but aren't they judging that I judged? Didn't they make a judgment that I made a judgment? The thing that they find so offensive or so intolerable, they just did themselves. They made a judgment that I made a judgment. So I went through this whole exercise of going back there through the book of Proverbs so we can start looking at this famous Sermon on the Mount, which is interesting because Jesus starts it off with paradoxes. When he says, blessed are the poor in spirit, Blessed are they that mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are they that do hunger and thirst. These are all, it seems, the opposite. It's paradoxical. The blessing's not in the unfortunate condition itself, but in the glorious expectation of what's going to come from that. Jesus, having lived in heaven his whole life before he comes down to this world, he knows how much better, how much superior heaven is to this life. So he just regarded anything that would make people long for and look forward to heaven as being a blessing, even if it is something that kind of a poor condition. That's what he's saying. And he starts the sermon off with paradoxes, because paradoxes, by definition, they seem contradictory, so they make you think. It's almost like Jesus oils the gears to get you to thinking right off the bat. Then he goes into his sermon, which is predominantly comparisons, using the word but. Contrast comparisons, almost exclusively. Just go down through there and look at it with me. So he gets through what we typically call the Beatitudes. Then in verses 13 and 16, he uses a metaphor. Ye are the salt of the earth. You're the light of the world. He doesn't say you're like salt or you're as the light. It's a metaphor. I am the vine, you are the branches. It's the same kind of teaching. He's using a common method. He's not coming to them with big, gigantic words that you only learn in college that nobody ever uses. He doesn't do that. He talks plain, simple language and uses plain, simple comparisons that everybody does. We do it. We use paradoxes. How about this? Youth is wasted on the young. Less is more. The only thing constant is change. You have to spend money to make money. It's a common thing we do all the time. But it does make you think a little bit. Now he gets into using the metaphors, telling them, you are the light, you're the salt. Then he gets into, I don't think that I came to destroy the law, but here's our word, here's the contrast. No, I didn't come to destroy it, but to fulfill it. And throughout basically this entire sermon, he uses that by far more than any other comparison. Mostly contrast comparisons. And he talks about a lot of things. But verse 20 of chapter 5 may be the most important verse of the entire sermon, because I think it is really, I don't know if that would be the proper thing to call it, the thesis. He says, for I say unto you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. And now he's going to go down through a long list of what the Pharisees have been teaching them. The Pharisees and the scribes were the teachers of the day. Daniel made reference in his table talk. These people didn't have the whole Bible that we do. And I tend to be critical of them too, Daniel. And shame on me, because it's easy on this side of the cross with the complete Bible that we have to say, how could these people be so silly, so stupid, so ignorant? It's easy to do that. It's easy to be judgmental, which we're going to get into here in just a little bit. But they didn't have the teaching that we have. They didn't have the whole complete Bible that we have. But this isn't really Jesus' first sermon. Right after he was baptized, he said, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. That phrase appears something like 32 times in the book of Matthew, the kingdom of heaven, which is interesting, as it doesn't seem to appear in any of the other gospels, but it does here. And Matthew, as a publican, which was looked down upon by the Pharisees, maybe that's why he's reporting part of this sermon the way that he is. So from now on, look at how many times when you see the word, take your pencil or your highlight pencil or whatever, and you can mark the word but. Verse 21, you've heard it said of old time, and this is another thing. Nowhere in here does he say, Moses said. He doesn't say that. He says, you have heard it said. Which is a sermon in and of itself. We could spend all of our time, and I won't do that, but I'll just throw it out there for you to digest. You have heard it said. Well, where did they hear it from? The Pharisees and the scribes, which were a bunch of hypocrites. A companion chapter to read to this, read Matthew chapter 23, who Albert Barnes says Jesus paints a full-length portrait of a hypocrite. And he does. Woe unto you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites. And he goes on to condemn them for the various things that they were hypocritical about. Well, that's who they heard this from. They heard the law of Moses, but they were hearing it from people who didn't really practice it. They were hearing it, but it wasn't being role modeled to them by the very people that was teaching it to them. So all throughout here it says, you've heard it said, but, verse 22, I say unto you, this is that contrast that we saw all through the book of Proverbs. This is a common, just as common as it could be, way of teaching, showing contrast. That's another interesting thing, is worthy of a sermon itself. You've heard it said, but I say unto you. He didn't teach like the other, like the scribes and the Pharisees, who would maybe quote Rabbi Gamaliel or Rabbi whoever. Jesus said, you've heard it said, but I say unto you, and he does this throughout this entire sermon, which is worth our, what's worth looking at. And he just goes down through there. He talks about adultery and divorce and oaths, and he's contrasting the way the Pharisees did it, but he says, yeah, but I say unto you, he talks about retaliation and love, and he gets into almsgiving and prayer, fasting, wealth, and he's contrasting the way they are used to or accustomed to hearing it taught, and that's very important, hearing it taught versus seeing it taught. Because they really weren't seeing it exemplified in the Pharisees and the scribes. They weren't seeing it role modeled, but they were hearing it. And that's why I think Jesus says, he doesn't say, well, Moses says this or Moses says that. He says, you've heard it said by these phonies. Now we get down into the text. Sorry it took so long to get here. It's not quite as obvious, maybe, because you're not going to find that word but like we see in the rest of the sermon here. But he's still on the same subject. He's still saying, unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the Pharisees, you're not going to see you're not going to enter the kingdom of heaven. He's gone through all these other things that they teach, but they don't really practice. Now he gets into this subject of judging. The one that the gunslinger always pulls out of his pocket and throws flashes right in front of your face. And I tragically admit that sometimes I really don't have the answer, because I'm just startled, I think, that they whip that out on me. judge not that ye be not judged. But here again, I think Jesus is just laying down a universal principle. And this is going to speak to what we were talking about. This is kind of new. I don't know how else to say it. We have teachings that I'm not sure they really had. They would have had the law of Moses. But this isn't saying that you can't judge, say like in our civil courts. The apostles approved that. But the book of Titus wasn't written when Jesus was given this sermon. Titus 3:1 says, put them in mind to be subject to principalities and powers, to obey magistrates, to be ready to every good work. And maybe Jesus did teach that, because the book of John says not everything that he said and did was recorded, because it couldn't contain it. A book couldn't contain it all. But we know the apostles taught that. So it's not prohibiting judgment by civil courts. Hebrews 13:7, obey them that have rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls as they must give an account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. The whole second chapter of 2 Peter. Later in this book, in Matthew 18, these are well-known verses. Jesus says, starting in verse 15, moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. Verse 16, if he shall not hear thee, then take with thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. Verse 17, and if he neglect to hear them, tell it to the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be unto thee as a heathen man and a publican. Now, how do you square with what? If you're going to take the position that Jesus is prohibiting judgment, which is wrong, you couldn't square it with these other verses. Jesus isn't prohibiting judgment altogether. He's prohibiting judging the way the Pharisees judged. That's why I go through all that exercise we went through about contrast and all these various comparisons, because that's really what he's comparing it to. Unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the Pharisees, you're not going to get into the kingdom of heaven. He's already reprimanded them, I guess, on the way they pray to be seen of men. Now he's reprimanding really the way the Pharisees judge, and he's telling them, don't be like them, don't make those kinds of judgments like they do. He's not prohibiting judgment. There's way more verses, I'm just going to pass over them. But I will say later in this very chapter, look at verse 15. Matthew 7, when Jesus says in the same sermon, beware of false prophets which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs or thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. Now, how in the world would you know the difference if you didn't make a judgment? How would you know that they're false prophets in sheep's clothing? You know, he says, you'll know them by the fruits. You're making a judgment. He's really just saying, don't be judgmental with that attitude, I guess, is the best way I can say it, that the Pharisees had. Look how they judged Jesus. In spite of all the good that he did, we don't like this guy. Only this is a word we've heard really quite a bit about. when people were being censored on Twitter before Mr. Musk bought it. The word censor, and then sometimes we might hear somebody in Congress or something like this may be censured. Well, it's two different words. Censure with the U, S-U-R-E, is to be reprimanded or rebuked. Censor, like when people were being kicked off of Twitter for what they had to say, this kind of thing. Censor means to prohibit or remove objectionable material. So when they're making a movie and there's some scenes that they really shouldn't, they ought to be in there because the adult content, they censor it. They get it out of there. Censor means to remove or to prohibit. And that's the way the Pharisees judged people. They judged whole classes of people, publicans, Samaritans. Whole classes of people they judged that way. And Jesus is basically saying, don't be like them. Don't judge like them. It's okay to judge, or otherwise you won't know if it's somebody's teaching something false or if it's true. How could you possibly do that? Then he goes on to say, he uses this very interesting comparison about having sawdust in your eye, or you got a big, from his version, a log. You got a big board in your eye, and you're complaining about some guy's got a little sawdust in his eye, and with this big plank in your eye, you somehow can see good enough to go help him remove that sawdust. And that's what Jesus is really saying in this. Don't judge like them, because, that's kind of an interesting thing. When you look at Luke's account of this, it's a slightly variation of this application. So Luke places it after the words when he describes the disastrous effect of being blind leaders of the blind. That's Luke 6:39 and 40. They're both going to fall into the ditch with the blinds leading the blind. Here in Matthew, he uses this same thing, the same allegory, I guess is the right word, after this kind of judgment. Say, how in the world? So in either case, how are you going to lead somebody when you're blind? Or how are you going to judge somebody when you haven't really judged yourself yet? That really seems to be the meaning here. Then he uses dogs and hogs. Both were unclean animals as far as the Jews were concerned. He says, don't give that which is holy unto dogs. Well, the book of Leviticus, when you talk about the meats that were offered up on the altar for the sacrifice, the priest could eat of it, and only clean people could eat of that. And whatever was left was to be burnt. You wouldn't give something that was offered on the altar to a dog. You wouldn't do that. Or you wouldn't give costly pearls to another unclean animal. Those things are fit for priests and that kind of thing. It wasn't fit for unclean animals. And that's what Jesus is saying. Don't make that mistake. How are you going to judge between what is holy and what's pearls and what is dogs versus hogs? How do you do that without making a judgment? It's impossible. The judgment that he's prohibiting is the way that the Pharisees judged. And Jesus is basically saying, don't be like that. And they knew, because at the end of this sermon, read the last two verses of chapter 7, it says that the people were in awe they were in awe of the way that Jesus taught, because he didn't teach as the scribes taught. He taught as one having authority, because he did. He didn't quote Rabbi so-and-so or Rabbi this guy or that guy. He said, I say unto you. He taught as one having authority because he does. He had the authority to teach like that. And he called these people out really for all their wrong ways of life. But that's who, Dano, that's who they had learned from. That's who the masses of the people had learned from, the hypocrites, the Pharisees. Before you go to bed tonight, read chapter 23 of Matthew. Jesus gives even further description of the hypocritical behavior of the Pharisees, who were the teachers of the law at the time. And that's where the masses got most of their information regarding the law and how you were supposed to live. So Matthew 7 is not a prohibition against judging. It's a prohibition against judging like the Pharisees judged. I hope it's been edifying. We're out of time. And as we always do at the end of every service that we have, just in case someone's present who's ready to make their commitment to God, to confess that Jesus is the Christ, and that you believe in him and you want to be baptized for the remission of your sins, or if there's any other need that the church can assist you with, let us know what it is as we stand and sing.